Good morning, and welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Last night, Lance Armstrong, in an interview with Oprah Winfrey on her network, finally admitted what many had long suspected, that he used banned performance-enhancing drugs during all seven of his Tour de France cycling victories.
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Did you ever use any other banned substances like testosterone, cortisone, or human growth hormone?
Yes.
Armstrong's admission is a blow to many who looked up to him, who he overcame testicular cancer. He's helped raise hundreds of millions of dollars for cancer education, support, and advocacy through the Livestrong Foundation. Armstrong's admission also follows the announcement last week that the baseball writers voted no one into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. Players with phenomenal statistical accomplishments like Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, or Sammy Sosa were eligible for induction, but they too have either admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs or have long been suspected of using such substances. Their generation has come to be known as the steroid era of baseball. On today's program, we consider what effect this steroid generation in professional sports is having on the next generation. We'll discuss the challenges coaches and parents face trying to keep their kids clean. And we have three guests with us this morning. Kurt Gibson is Associate Executive Director of the Illinois High School Association. Kurt, welcome to Focus.
Good morning, Craig. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us. Also with us is Andrea Wickerham, Vice President of Drug-Free Sport. It's a company that provides drug use prevention services, drug testing, for athletic organizations. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Donald Hooten, Jr. He's Vice President of Education for the Taylor Hooten Foundation, which is dedicated to fighting the abuse of steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs among America's youth. Donald, welcome to Focus.
Thanks for having us, Craig.
As we begin our conversation, we welcome your questions and comments as well about Lance Armstrong's admission, about steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs and their pervasiveness in both professional and potentially youth sports, and about efforts here in Illinois to limit such drugs from being used in youth sports. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on our Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Kurt, I understand you are only able to join us for the first half of this program, so I will start with you and just beg Donald and Andrea's patience. Kurt, I understand the state of Illinois is one of only three states in the U.S. that conducts drug testing for high school athletes. What sort of drug testing and what's tested for?
Well, we have four banned drug classes, and as we're quick to tell our member schools and their students, you know, our tests could contain a panel that would test for any of those banned substances that include anabolic steroids, stimulants, masking agents, and then growth hormones.
And what's the difference between each of those kinds of substances?
Well, I think that'd probably be a good question
for Andrea.
For Andrea, who oversees our whose company, I should say, oversees our and administers our drug testing program.
Okay, Andrea, go ahead and just give sort of a basic description of those different types of substances, and then we'll come back to our discussion with Kurt.
Sure. Anabolic steroids probably are what most of your listeners are most familiar with. Steroids, they're performance enhancing substances. Really synthetic versions and lots of offshoots of testosterone. They are illegal controlled substances by law. So performance-enhancing drugs. Stimulants also are considered performance-enhancing drugs, or can be. However, stimulants also can be potentially prescribed for some legitimate medical reasons. I won't go into all of that detail, perhaps until later. But oftentimes can be taken as a performance enhancer to lose weight, to run faster, jump higher, make it through practice, those types of performance gains. And then masking agents, actually are various substances that we know that athletes take in order to cover up or mask any of the substances that they may be afraid that the science will be able to detect. And then Kurt referred to growth hormone. It's actually, if I'm correct on this, human chorionic gonadotropin, which is, I'll call it a related compound. It's a peptide hormone, similar in nature to some degree, without going into the science, like an anabolic steroid.
Kurt, what was the impetus for drug testing here in Illinois?
Well, that actually began as a series of conversations within our sports medicine advisory committee 8 years ago. The committee, as a part of their regular meetings, talk about a lot of sports medicine-related topics, and they had been talking for a while about performance-enhancing substance use by student-athletes in our state. And this advisory committee is comprised of medical professionals from around the state, athletic trainers, school administrators. And they sort of, as their discussion carried on, they began to wonder aloud if, you know, the membership, meaning our member schools, would be interested in looking at what a substance testing program could look like. We began then from those advisory committee meetings going out to our membership and just talking about what the SMAC felt was going on in schools around our state. The membership consistently came back to us and said, you know, yeah, from talking with our coaches and our students, this is a topic and a program we'd like to do more investigation on. So we worked with our sports medicine folks, or the SMAC as we call them, and then began to look at what a testing program could look like here in Illinois. And when we had developed a model, we took that back out to the membership and said, okay, you told us you were interested in what a program could be like here in Illinois. Here's a model. Give us some feedback. And not only give us some feedback on this, but continue to reinforce this idea for us, if it still exists, that there is a need for such a program. And the membership, again, continued to say, yes, we believe that there's a need for this. This program looks good to us. And so five and a half, six years ago, our board of directors then, following this, you know, 2.5 year conversation within our membership, elected to move forward with a testing program here in Illinois. Now, in having all those discussions, you know, we raised within the membership this idea of, well, you know, how do we want this testing program to look, and what do we feel like its objectives would be? And here in our state, and this may separate us a little bit from Texas and New Jersey, you'd have to, you know, talk more specifically with those folks, but at least as it relates to Illinois, you know, we have believed from the beginning that, you know, if we put the right resources and make them available to our student athletes, the vast, vast majority of them will make good decisions. And so in saying that, I want to emphasize to the listeners today that our program has not been designed to be a what I'll call a punitive one. We have, from day one, with our membership, viewed our program as another tool for our students to say no. So it's really, in our view, serving as a deterrent. It's another reason why a youngster should be saying, hey, I don't want any part of these kinds of substances as I train to represent my school in an interscholastic contest. I want to train cleanly and fairly so that my competition will be more reflective of who I am and not what I put in my system.
When are student athletes tested, and then what happens if they do test positive?
You know, it's a good question, because our program has evolved over the 5 years that we've been in existence with it. When we began our testing program, we tested at selected state series events. Could be anything from a regional volleyball game to a sectional track meet to a semifinal football game, but our testing occurred only following what we call state series competitions. Year two, I believe, of our testing program, we began to expand that in year two and year three, following some legislation passed in the General Assembly, we were able to expand our program to test what I'll call year-round. But when I say that, I'm talking about during the school year and not during the summer months. And from that time on, we've been able to test during the school year. We still have the component available to us to test during our state series events, but our focus for the last 3.5-4 years has been to test during the school year. So when we were able to go into schools with, I'm going to say unannounced, but there is communication between the folks in Andrea's office and the schools 24 to 48 hours in advance, so logistics can be covered in terms of how the proceedings are going to go on the day of the test. But essentially, when a school is selected and the testing occurs, if there is a positive test, then we have a another layer built in, I'll call it, another administrative layer built in before any penalty is assessed to the student or the school. And that buffer, that extra layer, is what we call our medical review process. And we have a medical review officer who gets the results of the positive test, and that person will establish communication with the individual who had a positive test and his or her family. And generally, the family gets our medical review officer in contact with the student's physician, and there's a dialogue that goes on. And essentially what the medical review officer is trying to do is determine if there's a valid medical reason for the test. Andrea mentioned a minute or two ago that, you know, especially as it relates to stimulants, there are situations, and there are situations when students may have a medical reason to have a prescription for a stimulant, and that's just one example, but they're not taking that stimulant to try and enhance their athletic performance. They're taking that because of some other condition that they might have or have had and are trying to address through this medication. And if our medical review officer can determine that there's a valid medical reason for the positive test, then our medical review officer can recommend to our executive director that the student be given a medical exemption for the
right.
year.
And then just quickly, what happens if that's not the case?
Yeah, if that's not the case, then the student is going to be suspended for a 365-day period. Now, during that time, they can apply for reinstatement after 90 days of the suspension.
Just to clarify, suspension from athletic activities or from the school period?
No, from interscholastic athletic participation.
Gotcha.
They can't participate on any of their school's teams.
Okay.
They can apply for reinstatement after 90 days, but they have to submit a drug test that shows a negative result, and they're responsible for the arranging of that test and the costs associated with it. And they must successfully complete a pre-approved drug education course.
Okay. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Amid Lance Armstrong's interview with Oprah Winfrey and baseball writers choosing not to elect anyone from the steroid era to the Hall of Fame this year, we're discussing the use of banned substances in sports and its impact in particular on young athletes and how that's led to drug testing here in the state of Illinois. We're talking with Kurt Gibson of the Illinois High School Association. Also with us are Donald Hooten from the Taylor Hooten Foundation and Andrea Wickerham of Drug Free Sport. We welcome you to the conversation as well at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, or you can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me bring Donald in at this point. Donald, the Taylor Hooten Foundation was named for your younger brother, Taylor. Let's start by hearing a little bit about his story, and I guess we should start with the fact that he loved baseball, right?
Yes, sir. Baseball's always been a choice sport in our family. I myself had the opportunity to play at the Division I level at two different schools. My cousin, Bert Hooten, pitched in the big leagues for years. So Taylor had a lot to look up to. And during his high school athletic career, him and a bunch of his friends, you know, made the uneducated decision, just like so many of our kids admit to doing, is to get into using anabolic steroids. You know, number one, to get bigger and to look better, but also to, you know, improve his chances of making the varsity team. And about 6 months after Taylor made that decision, he took his own life. And, you know, due to depression that can be brought on by the use of anabolic steroids and the withdrawal and coming off in the middle of a steroid cycle. And, you know, so after we lost Taylor, we put together the Taylor Hooten Foundation to deliver education programs all over North America.
So just to give us a little bit better sense, what was Taylor like before he was on steroids, and then what happened after he started to use them?
Taylor, like most other students, our steroid users are typically our best kids. They're our highest achievers. Taylor was a funny kid. You know, Taylor was, you know, very, very good academically. He was carrying a 3.75 grade point average. Just a very level-headed, easygoing kid. And you could tell, I mean, his personality and mine were very much the same. And you could tell after he began using these drugs, just within weeks, how his personality would change. If you could imagine a teenager going from, you know, extreme aggression and explosive behavior to depression, I mean, and that can happen within 10 minutes, and I can go story after story on that. But I can remember, Craig, vividly, the last vacation we had together, we were walking down the beach, and he was telling me about how these drugs made him feel aggressively depressed, and, you know, they made him feel weird, and, you know, his personality changed and what have you. And, you know, so that's, you know, from a personal standpoint, a personal story, you know, how he changed from before just being the normal kid to having mood swings to going into a depression.
You know, most of us are at least vaguely aware of the dangers of using steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs and maybe the impact they can have. Do you think the same can be said, though, of young people?
As far as using the steroids and having an impact on them?
And being aware going into the process that this could have an impact on not just them physically, but also maybe mentally and emotionally. Do you think that's something that generally young people don't think about?
Absolutely. And I say that because what we know and what surveys will show is that 85% of our kids have never had a parent, teacher, or coach talk with them about the dangers of these drugs. And my brother didn't either. You know, and playing at the Division I level, I mean, I heard about how, you know, they can give you the severe acne and you know, what, you know, the basic things that testosterone can do just to the male body. But I had no idea how in-depth and dangerous these drugs could be. And most of our kids don't either. I delivered a program yesterday to a high school up in Massachusetts, and many of the kids were sitting there shocked. They had no idea because, again, it's a popular topic right now. You know, the kids are using this stuff. They're talking about it amongst themselves, yet, you know, as adults, we're doing a poor job of educating our kids and letting them know what is really going on. What are they really taking and putting into their young, developing bodies?
Well, I imagine it's also a question of what is it that's motivating them to do that? And I'm wondering what you hear from students when you speak with them, when you go out and speak at schools like you did yesterday, about the pressures they can sometimes face when it comes to being at their peak physically.
Top three reasons. And these drugs are moving out of athletics and moving into the general school population. But number one, kids say they use this stuff is to look better. You know, and that's all due to body image and everything that they get hammered on with the media. Two is to feel better about themselves. And third is to improve their athletic performance. And a lot of people are shocked to find out, you know, that there's a lot of high school girls that are getting into using these drugs as well.
Kurt, before we let you go, why do you think Illinois has been aggressive in testing high school athletes for steroids and other banned substances like Texas, like New Jersey, when so many other states, the other states haven't been?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I would be in a real good position to speak for other states. As I've told folks who have from other states who have talked to me about, you know, our program and how we got into it, I really think it's the kind of thing that needs to begin at a what I'll call a grassroots level, and at least that's how our feeling on this is. When states feel like there's a potential problem or an issue that needs to be addressed, I think the vehicle's there. If a state association wants to engage in that kind of program, it's a tough question to get your arms totally around, but at least that's how we feel about it here.
Kurt Gibson is Associate Executive Director of the Illinois High School Association. Kurt, I know you have to go, but I wanted to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Craig. I appreciate it.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we will continue our discussion about steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs and in sports, how it's impacted young people in middle and high school and college, for that matter, how it's led to testing of high school athletes in a few states, including Illinois. We'll learn more about the testing process from Andrea Wickerham of Drug Free Sport in the second half of the show. We'll also talk some more with Donald Hooten Jr. of the Taylor Hooten Foundation, and we will welcome your thoughts, too, at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu, and we will talk more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Colin Murphy on the history of the Inquisition. Some of the interrogation techniques used today were described in 13th century manuals.
What today we would call the good cop, bad cop, that's laid out by the medieval inquisitors in exactly the same way.
Murphy's book, God's Jury, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Lance Armstrong last night, in an interview taped this week with Oprah Winfrey, admitted using performance-enhancing drugs and blood doping throughout his cycling career, including all 7 years he won the Tour de France. Last week, baseball writers chose not to elect anyone from the steroid era to the Hall of Fame this year. In light of these developments, we are discussing the use of banned substances in sports, youth sports in particular, and the resulting testing that takes place here in Illinois and a couple of other states. We're talking with Donald Hooten Jr. from the Taylor Hooten Foundation and Andrea Wickerham of Drug Free Sport, and we welcome your thoughts about the use of and testing for steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs in pro sports and in youth sports at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Andrea, how does the drug testing process work?
It's a fairly complex question, and there's many, many, many answers to that. I think it's important for your listening audience to understand. We tend to say that not all drug testing programs are created equal. And so it's really important to look at and ask the question is, who's the testing authority? Kurt obviously mentioned the Illinois High School Association, and so they have their testing program. Most folks are familiar with the NCAA. They have their own, as a national sport governing body, their testing program. And many colleges and universities, many of the professional leagues, and individual high schools have their own testing program as well. But once you get past who is the testing authority, it really is important to ask and consider, because each authority, each organization may have different goals and objectives as to what they're trying to accomplish, and Kurt mentioned that. Generally, it may be in a different order. Oftentimes I'll speak of a Venn diagram, and many of us have similar goals and objectives as to why we're drug testing, but they may be in a different order depending on who is the testing organization. But how it works, or why it works, or why we drug test is multifaceted. Kurt talked about deterring youth. That's clearly important for every organization. Protecting the health and safety of student athletes and all athletic participants. I think it's important to talk about protecting the integrity of sport itself and the game of sport. At the Olympic level, but this is true at all levels, I think it is very critical to consider what's oftentimes referred to as the clean athlete, that drug testing works, and I'll get into the specifics momentarily, but it really is to protect and help the clean athlete as well. And yes, I call it the unintended consequence, depending on the authority, is to detect use, is to stop the cheater if it's a performance-enhancing drug, but also to detect use if it's a drug of abuse, which oftentimes different testing authorities test for illicit substances. And then related to that is really important is to provide counseling and therapy and rehabilitation to get to the root cause, and I think that's a weakness of many programs, to get to the root cause of why the participant used. And there's many answers to that. And last, but certainly not least, is a good testing program, and I believe this is very important, has to have at some point in time, and Kurt alluded to it, a strong sanction that must be imposed and administered consistently across the board.
You raised a number of issues there. Let me start with one of the last ones you raised, which is the importance of figuring out why someone uses these substances and maybe the role some admissions like Lance Armstrong's last night play. And Donald, let me bring you in on this. In your opinion, is it helpful to hear admissions like Lance Armstrong's? Is it helpful when baseball writers take a stand and don't vote players suspected of steroid use into the Hall of Fame who otherwise might deserve it? Is that helpful in terms of deterring professional athletes and young student athletes from using?
My opinion on that, Craig, is it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Doping in sports has been a long time problem. But I just think that, just recently out of the University of Minnesota, there was a survey that was done, that report over a million of our kids, I'm talking middle school, high school kids, admit to using these drugs. These are our youngsters. These are our important folks that are openly admitting it. But yet, all this attention is gathered around, last night's interview or the Hall of Fame induction, when we should be using these stories and these interviews to educate our kids. It's a great teaching point to let them know that, first of all, it's cheating. Absolutely, it's ruining the value of sport. But the other thing is these drugs are illegal. Whether we're talking about, admitting to guilt, to breaking the rules and what have you, if you or I were to be busted with this, it's what's called a Schedule III controlled substance. I mean, we could be looking at jail time or even a felony.
Andrea, one of the things that you hear from folks that are accused of using these substances that test positive for them, they say, it's a false positive. Are there false positives in these tests?
In our opinion, no. The phrase false positive is somewhat of a misnomer. The phrase false positive is actually most times referred to, it is a positive result coming from the laboratory. And I'll back up just a tad. The laboratory piece is hugely important. At the Olympic level, at the NCAA level, at the Texas high school program that Donald's familiar with, they use one of two World Anti-Doping Agency laboratories, certified laboratories here in the U.S. And so the credential of the laboratory and the certification of that laboratory, and I'm talking about performance-enhancing drugs, so steroids and stimulants,
mm-hmm.
In our opinion, really needs to be sent to those WADA laboratories. They're very, very good. And so they are seeing the positive results. But the phrase false positive is oftentimes referred to, and Kurt said the phrase, a medical exception or a legitimate medical reason for the substance. So it is a positive test result. The laboratory reported it correctly, found it in the urine or blood. But there is a legitimate reason for that athlete or participant's use of the drug, whether it's for, it might be Adderall or Ritalin for attention deficit disorder. It could be, depending on what you're testing for.
Right.
It could be a diuretic, which on the cheating side could be used to mask a drug test. But yet, for a legitimate medical reason, diuretics sometimes are used for high blood pressure. And so false positive really is a phrase that we prefer not to use. We tend to be more concerned about false negative is the results that may be, I'll use the phrase, flying under the radar.
Well, let me interrupt you there, because that is something else that we often hear is a challenge for people like yourself that develop and provide tests. It's hard to get ahead of the drugs. Once you have a test for one banned substance, another more sophisticated drug comes along that you can't test for. Is that still sort of the case?
It is to some degree. I think it will always be the state of affairs, unfortunately, in drug testing. I'm guessing you and many of the listeners are aware of the Balco scandal a number of years ago, where THG was a substance that was related to the Balco scandal. Well, nobody really knew that THG existed. There were very sophisticated dopers and cheaters and physicians who were producing this substance unbeknownst to the testing authorities. And so there always will be this cat and mouse game. But that's not to say that there are hundreds and hundreds of substances that the laboratories are very well aware of that we are able to detect and deter use. But that is, you know, unfortunately, this in some regards, the state of affairs. And I would say it is related to that, very critical for laboratories to have a research base associated with them in order to at least try to keep up and be aware of up-and-coming substances. And that's what's so important about the World Anti-Doping Agency is they are, those laboratories are doing and consistently doing research on banned substances.
Donald, if testing is potentially one step behind ever more sophisticated substances that become available, what in your mind is the key to ultimately reducing the use of performance-enhancing drugs among young people?
Yeah, Craig, we're very, very big supporters of testing. You know, and just over the years, we've lost our confidence in it just because it's so expensive, especially if we're talking about the high school levels to test full panels of these drugs. We're big supporters of education, and more education. You know, just the things that these kids are taking. Most of the student athletes that are going to be using these banned substances are going to be using them in the off season. And to give you an example, you know, playing baseball at the Division I level, we had 75% of the guys on our team that were actively using anabolic steroids with an active testing program, and nobody tested positive. And that's not to say the testing doesn't work, but what was happening was our athletes, they were using drugs that were only going to stay in their system for a few weeks. You know, they had backup plans as far as if they were to get drug tested. You know, we had notification prior to, but it's becoming so sophisticated, and these kids have access to all of this information, you know, online to know, okay, well, if I start using this drug now and my school's only going to be testing me during the, you know, the school year, it'll be out of my system. And that goes the same with any of the other recreational drugs.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're talking about the use of steroids and other banned substances in sports and efforts to eliminate them among young athletes and the impact of developments like Lance Armstrong's admission of doping in an interview with Oprah Winfrey broadcast last night and tonight. My guests are Andrea Wickerham from Drug Free Sport and Donald Hooten Jr. from the Taylor Hooten Foundation. We welcome your thoughts at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me throw this out to both of you, but I'll start with you, Andrea. What are the key differences between the sort of over-the-counter products you might find at your GNC or similar store and illegal performance-enhancing drugs like anabolic steroids? What's the difference?
I think generally it's important to realize that there may not be a difference in what the outcome is. For example, there are over-the-counter dietary supplements, really is what you're referring to.
Right.
Which can be purchased at online, many health nutrition stores, and even in local grocery stores and pharmacies. Technically, they're generally not illegal, so that's why they're sitting on the shelf. But there's been more than a handful of research studies done on some of the over-the-counter and over-the-internet supplements that actually contain anabolic steroids or what's called precursors or prohormones, sort of the lead-up to those anabolic steroids. And they may be in there intentionally by the manufacturer. They may be in the supplement through contamination. In the manufacturing process, the biggest problem with the over-the-counter, over-the-internet dietary supplements is that they're under-regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. They're not required to go through efficacy standards. They're not required generally to be considered, to be tested, and considered to be safe and effective before they come to market. It's actually just the reverse of that, that they're not they're not pulled from the market until there's been enough reported negative side effects from those. So the fact that they may have precursors to anabolic steroids, they are steroids, they are related compounds, they do work. One of the differences, as you asked, is many of them are taken orally. They tend to be water-based. And Donald said this in his previous statement, that they will leave your system fairly quickly because they are taken orally, they're water-based, and so it's this sort of low level of anabolic steroid use. In comparison to what you're referring to, Craig, are what most people would consider to be the really bad anabolic steroids, injectables,
right.
And oil-based injectables. But as a matter of course, they are the same drug, and they can lead to a positive drug test, and most certainly they are performance enhancing, and that's the difficulty difficulty in educating student athletes, young and college students, on the risks associated with taking those dietary supplements.
Speaking of risks associated with taking them for young people, I think that's something Marlene in Urbana wanted to talk about. Marlene, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, that was my concern, is the medical effects of these drugs, besides just the, you know, enhancing sportability, but the medical consequences, especially with their taking them so young. And the other thing is the fact that a lot of people, girls and boys, are taking these for bodybuilding. As she was talking about, the dietary supplement. And I've heard that that can be eventually bad for osteoporosis. It can possibly have problems with the sperm quality. And I'm just curious as to what they have to say about that.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Donald, actually, let me turn to you on that. When we are teenagers, we usually haven't come to any real terms about our own mortality, or we have this natural tendency to think that we can sacrifice the long term if there's a short term gain to be had. We don't think about what's going to happen when we're 40, 50, 60 years old. Do you get the impression that when it comes to performance enhancing drugs, it's all about the present at the expense of the future, particularly for kids?
Absolutely. I mean, we're in a society today where these kids want instant gratification. And, you know, we've just developed a new program that specifically focuses on dietary supplements, and we're working with, NSF Sport and some of our board members to, you know, finish up the slide deck and get everything out. Because one of the things we talk to the kids right now is many, many, many of them, I would say almost all of them, do not need to use any sort of dietary supplement. And, Even yesterday after I delivered a program, a young man came to me. Hey, I'm taking this. What do you think? My personal trainer recommended it to me. I said, well, if your personal trainer recommended it to you, what does your daily diet consist of? Well, I don't know. Well, did he provide you a nutrition plan? You know, because a lot of these kids are using it because if, like Andrea said, they're intentionally or unintentionally spiked with anabolic steroids. And if you could imagine some of our kids that are buying these supplements that are seeing body changes, it spreads like wildfire. Now each and every one want to use it because all of a sudden the dietary supplements work. So what we tell them is, number one, it could be very unhealthy for your body to be taking this because it's not regulated by the FDA, as Andrea said. So you have no idea what you're putting into your body and no idea what level, especially for the collegiate athletes that are running the risk of taking this stuff and throwing a positive test. And they're like, well, I was only taking a protein shake or I was only taking creatine. So, again, even talking to some of the elite nutritionists, our kids, our youth, they don't burn enough calories each day to need these dietary supplements. They can get what they're looking for eating a proper diet.
Andrea, were Marlene's perceptions about medical complications accurate?
Most certainly, and that's always been a hard sell from an education standpoint for young people to hear those negative health effects. But that doesn't mean that we should not stop providing them. It is important. It's important to sort of know the history of anabolic steroids and what some of the negative health effects can be from something as simple, and I use that word in quotes, but for men, from acne to balding. Marlene mentioned lowering sperm count and becoming impotent is clearly a negative side effect. Enlarging your heart, stress on your muscles, because by taking the anabolic steroids, which is to enhance muscle growth, you're going to gain weight, and you're going to impact the amount of weight, and I'm not a biomechanist by any measure, but you're going to impact the stress on your muscles. So there's numerous studies about dehydration, the impact on muscle growth, and whether your body can actually handle the size that it becomes because of taking anabolic steroids. And on the female side, clearly impact on secondary sex characteristics as well. But lowering other negative side effects by taking steroids, lowering your voice in women, body hair, and clearly the negative side effects at any age is important for all of us to at least begin to educate students and student athletes that it does happen. The hard part with anabolic steroids is obviously we learn a lot anecdotally. They're illegal and the harm on humans. There aren't many human studies out there that that you're allowed to conduct because of the negative side effects. So anecdotally, I think there's great concern about the impact of steroid use on the liver and on kidneys and on brain formation and things like that. So those are unknowns scientifically, but clearly they're the ones that I mentioned previously. It is well known the negative health effects. So she is exactly right, and it can and it does happen. And Donald Hooton obviously lived it firsthand with the mental side effects from coming off of those steroid cycles, and that's the piece that I think those of us in testing and education and prevention really have to hit home.
Donald, I also wanted to ask you a little bit about how educators, pro athletes, and others can influence young people, young athletes. Specifically, first of all, how do you think professional athletes' behavior, like Lance Armstrong, now admitting to performance-enhancing drugs, how that behavior influences young people?
Well, I mean, these kids idolize these guys and gals. They watch them on TV. You know, there's millions of dollars being made. They see it. You know, I'm at loss for the word, but I mean, it's they see it on TV. I mean, you know, a huge event last night. It was all over the news. So it sends a negative message to our kids that we're not discussing the health side effects, and we're not discussing the enlarged heart and what it can do to your internal organs. We're not, you know, we're just discussing the whole cheating aspect, let alone it being illegal. So, as you know, these guys and gals that are role models are sending a terrible message to our kids, you know, by doing this. And these are our role models. These are the guys and gals that should be setting the example to making it cool to play clean, to play the sport for what it was originally designed for. Best human versus best human, best skill versus best skill, not who's taking what designer drug this week. And, you know, I believe I heard in the interview last night, I had to do it because everybody else was doing it. So therefore it wasn't cheating. That you know, that's not the case. And that is the mentality, you know, as a society and as educators, we have to figure out a way to get that across to our kids. Just because everybody else is doing it doesn't make it right.
Speaking of role models, what role should coaches play in this process?
Coaches need to, you know, many coaches need to become educated on this topic, get familiar with it, with what their kids are taking, and have a, you know, a drug-free policy on their team. It doesn't matter what the school policy is, but, you know, as we tell coaches, if you catch a kid on your team using illegal drugs, it should be you're off the team. You're done. You cannot no longer play. And I would imagine, and you know, because I knew if that were installed on me, like, hey, if you get busted just one time, that's it. You're done. Sports, you know, no longer. You can no longer play sports. I think that would really help. Is what I'm trying to say. But coaches need to be talking to their kids about this. They need to become educated. And we have a lot of coaches, especially at the high school level, that are recommending creatine and protein and pre-workouts for their kids, and watching these kids even consume these energy drinks prior to games. And that's just, and all that is just a lack of education in our society, and that we need to do a better job of getting out there, getting in front of them, and letting them know there's education available to you, whether it's the Taylor Hooten Foundation or Drug Free Sport or the NCAA, there's education out there available, and we need to use the Hall of Fame, and we need to use the Lance Armstrongs of these topics in the media right now to push education to our coaches, our adult influencers, and our kids.
Well, I imagine, though, that there are even other pressures beyond what we've talked about today that feed into all of this. Some young athletes see the sport they play as their only option for a better life. They must dominate in high school to gain notice. Then you get maybe a college scholarship. They may even have dreams of turning pro. How does all of that feed into the culture that sort of makes steroid use or performance-enhancing drugs of other kinds seem in some way acceptable?
Well, we're in a highly competitive society. And I remember Dick Buck is telling this story, a mother asking Dick, telling him, hey, you know, ask Dick what he did to make it into the pros. How did he get there? And, you know, I was listening to Dick's interview, and basically he told her, look, there's a very, very, very small chance that your child is going to become, you know, a pro athlete. Enjoy the game while you can, because I wish I could go back and do it all over. But the temptation, Craig, is there, and it's all about getting to the next level. It's all about winning, and we've lost focus as far as just winning is just playing the game the right way and having it on a level playing field.
Andrea, final word to you. What are the most effective things we can do society-wide to keep young athletes clean?
Almost everything that Donald and I and Kurt in the beginning have talked about is what we call here at Drug Free Sport. It's a comprehensive approach to prevention. There's a variety of factors, and they're not in any particular order, but it clearly is, and I'm in full agreement with the education component that Donald talked about. It has to be consistent, it has to be ongoing, it has to be targeted, and it has to be appropriate for the audience. You know, girls and boys, sports, cross-country runners and football players have to be educated to some degree a little bit differently as far as what is appropriate, what can I replace. If I'm not going to take steroids, if I'm not going to take these over-the-counter dietary supplements, if I'm not going to be able to take protein or creatine, what can I do? So you always have to replace it with the appropriate behavior, and that's nutrition and lots of other things. From the coach's perspective that you just asked about, Craig, is really trying to stop the mixed messages, or what I call complete the sentence, which is instead of saying to an incoming freshman student athlete at the college level, you have to gain 20 pounds or you have to lose 20 pounds, is you have to continue that sentence and say how and
exactly
what's appropriate and how long it's going to take. It's not a short-term fix.
And we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to say thank you to both of you. Andrea Wickerham is Vice President of Drug Free Sport, a company that provides drug use prevention services for athletic organizations. Andrea, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Craig. Thank you for having us.
And Donald Hooten Jr. is Vice President of Education for the Taylor Hooten Foundation. Donald, thank you as well.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks also to Kurt Gibson, Associate Executive Director of the Illinois High School Association, who joined us earlier. Focus will be preempted Monday so that we can bring you live coverage of President Obama's second inauguration from National Public Radio. Our live coverage of that will begin at 9 a.m. Central Time right after Morning Edition and continue until at least 1 o'clock. We'll also have an expanded edition of Talk of the Nation that will continue until 3 o'clock. And Monday night at 8, we'll present a special wrap-up special of Inauguration Day activities. That's what's happening on Monday. On Tuesday's Focus, we will talk about the adoption process and the politics involved in light of the Russian government recently instituting a controversial ban on adoptions to the United States. That's on Tuesday. Today's show is produced by Lindsay Moon. Kyle Mabry's our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen.